Schneider Electric is the proud sponsor of this podcast series. A core value for Schneider, for both its employees and customers, is to learn every day. They trust the following will provide some learning for you today.
My name is Jo Taranto, and I'm joined today by Tony Bamford, Practice Leader, Network Planning at Stantec, and we're talking about the Canary Creek Pilot Study. Welcome, Tony.
Thank you, Jo. It's a pleasure to be here.
Canary Creek, Tony, tell us a little about the area and what's been proposed.
Canary Creek is in the northern suburbs of Brisbane. So it's a mixture of residential properties and light industrial areas, mostly residential to the south of the creek and industrial to the north. The area is relatively flat-lying and historically has had a number of issues with overflows from the sewer network during big wet weather events, causing problems to both the environment around but also to some of the properties.
And so it's an area that frequently floods or is inundated one
yes.
way or another?
Yeah.
Must be fairly unpopular with the local residents for that reason. So what was proposed by Urban Utilities to fix this problem?
The area was being looked at in an area of transition. So traditionally, the way that they were had targets was very much based on a containment policy. And the area did pretty much meet that containment criteria. However, obviously, take into account the customers and listening to what the customers had to say, that wasn't enough. So we were asked to look at alternative approaches and alternative methods of actually trying to mitigate some of those problems, trying to find a solution that would improve the quality of life there, but wasn't just a traditional build a bigger pipe.
So the scope you've been given is to come up with a solution that's maybe a bit different to what you would sometimes do. What does that process involve when you're coming in to work with a utility?
That's a great question. Part of it was really working with the planning team there within Urban Utilities, but also looking around to see what else is being done both in Australia and the rest of the world. So part of it was a bit of a literature review, see what alternatives are, see what other people are doing. There's often no new ideas, they just evolve from others. And so this is where it started. There's a bit of a collection of other ideas, other thoughts, what are other people doing, how could that potentially be adapted for this area? And we went back and worked together to find which of those options appeared the most suitable for this area.
And it seems to be from the outside that Urban Utilities did a lot of consultation with the community because mm-hmm. that was obviously driving this project as well. Were you involved in any of that, and did that help shape the work you proposed?
Not directly. I would have loved to have had a bit more involvement with that side of things, but there are professional people far better able than myself to really do that community contact and community consultation justice. I'm a technical person rather than necessarily the ideal person, but it was absolutely crucial. We agreed right at the beginning, with this being different to our normal style of solution, that we had to take several people along for the journey, not just the stakeholders being people such as Brisbane City Council and some of the kind of bodies that look after things such as water quality and the environment. We'd take all those kind of knowledgeable stakeholders, as you perhaps call them, but also the local community who have a lot of expertise and a lot of real strong knowledge there. And it was deemed really important for this project because, after all, they're the people that are being impacted currently, and they'll be the people who have to live with this area day in, day out in the future. So having something that works with them and allowing them to really feed back in, listen to what the science says and the engineering says, but then listen to what the heart says, and adapting the project a little bit based on some of that feedback. And it was tremendously helpful, and it did actually change the solution.
So from what I can tell, the project was looking at increasing the volume that could potentially come through so that you didn't have the flooding, you didn't have these overflow issues. Were there other, I guess, things that were part of the planning, nice-to-haves or ideal scenarios at the end in terms of you know, that helped you shape the work that you were going to do?
Yeah, there was a number of nice to haves in this. Primarily, the primary part of the project was to manage that sewer overflow scenario during the big wet weather events. The existing network is stable and can easily handle the dry weather scenario both now and in the future, and can also handle small events and small wet weather events. It's the larger ones that don't occur that often. And so building big infrastructure for things that only work occasionally doesn't seem to necessarily add up all the time. But one of the nice to haves that is happening with this is it was acknowledging that stormwater and water that's running off from roads and from streets and from roofs isn't clean. And there is actually pollutants in that. And having the opportunity to almost get two uses out of this design, that whilst it does manage the wastewater and the screened wastewater when it needs to, during smaller events when the wastewater is still being fully contained, it takes some of that stormwater into the system and actually puts it through the wetlands and the bioretention ponds to clean and take out some of those pollutants that are in the stormwater, hopefully providing an overall benefit much more frequently than just something that operates a small number of times just to deal with that dilute foul sewage.
You're listening to the Australian Water Association podcast series, and I'm speaking with Tony Bamford from Stantec. So they created a wetland as part of the design, and as you said, there was some bioretention there. Once a model was settled on, is it as straightforward as, let's proceed, or is there a bunch of different scenarios and risks and things that you have to think about that can make it decision-making a little more?
Yeah, there's an awful lot of parts and moving components in there, and that's why it was really good to bring a large number of people into this and getting a large number of specialists working together to this, because several minds are far greater than one, and bringing those people in to go, have you thought about this, have we considered that, and going, oh, okay, we need to step back a little bit, and having that opportunity, because this was, it was almost initially a pet project. It was done extremely carefully, but we wanted to go in very much with our eyes open in terms of what we were going to achieve. So it was step by step, little pieces. So it gave us the opportunity to get that feedback, step back if necessary, make those changes, and then move forward. So, for example, the actual location of those wetlands changed from the original concept based on feedback from several other stakeholders and the community who said, that's not a great location for us. Over there is better. And we then factored that in, investigated how would that work? Would it cause a material change to the project in terms of how it functioned, yes or no? And how could we adapt it? So there were several changes along that path. And there were still changes even through into the construction phase that comes back through to the modeling and the planning side to say, we need to change this because we've found any particular reason. It could be that the ground conditions aren't quite right. They need to move the chamber slightly to the left or the right, or it needs to be shallower or deeper. How will that influence the project? And going back and checking those things. And often it becomes a bit of a conversation between the people on the ground who want one thing and the hydraulics and the checking of the maths and the science to make sure that that both can work. And usually a compromise is agreed that still meets the criteria, but also is still reasonably constructible.
You mentioned in your work that there was a shift from what you call a 5x average dry weather flow, which I'm sure a lot of engineers would like be nodding their heads with that, to a frequency and effects-based strategy. Is that a big shift, and what does that mean?
It's a very big shift for the business looking at it from Southeast Queensland's perspective. Southeast Queensland historically utilised that 5x average dry weather flow metric to size their sewers to drain and take the flows away. That effectively means you'd measure what the average dry weather flow from the population is, multiply it by 5, and you end up with a containment. That is actually a very good metric. It's most suitable, especially for greenfield or areas where you've got no information to start with. And it harks back a long way. I mean, that policy or very similar versions of it, you can trace back to the late 1800s in some of the first sewer networks. It's not that dissimilar. So it has served a purpose and it's very strong. But where it falls down a little bit is in mature catchments where we've already been living, where the sewer network has been established and it's perhaps been in for 70, 80 years in some cases. It doesn't necessarily reflect how that system has evolved over time because it's a very simple equation rather than measuring what's actually happening. So the move from that to one that's looking at frequency and then eventually effects or risk-based is really about collecting data of what's going on underground. I mean, we don't see that. It's all happening below our feet. So we have to measure that and understand, is that sewer performing well? Is it performing less well during certain conditions? And what's the best way forward to make sure that it's doing its job, which is protect really about public health?
Can you ever come up against surprises in the model? So you ever go, oh, not what we expected?
Yes, it does happen. It shouldn't in some ways. But the there's an old adage about hydraulic modelling that a good modeller never believes their model. And so you start from the position of thinking you know what the answer is, doing the modelling, checking that, does it meet with your theories and your understanding, and then still checking it again in either way. If it matches what you think, you have to look at whether you've got an unconscious bias to what you think it should be. So you then check it to make sure it does match up and all the numbers add up. But if it doesn't show what you expect, it could be everything from something that you've missed, or it could be a mistake in the model. So you go back and take it apart and analyze it like every kind of scientist does, an engineer. You take it back to its components to understand why, and then hopefully get the answer and then move forward again.
So what other barriers did you come up against, Tony? There must have been some along the way.
There weren't too many barriers, but we were very fortunate. We got a lot of really great support from both urban utilities, but also the various stakeholders were very positive. The main things in that were because were able to take our time with it. It wasn't something that had a really tight deadline to us. So a lot of those barriers that we would normally face, especially on time pressures, weren't really there. Our biggest challenges were making sure that because we were doing things that were a bit different to what is the tried and tested, even though there are examples around the world of similar kind of projects, it's making sure that we were explaining things properly to get it across the line to all the stakeholders. So that's sometimes the challenge from a planning or an engineering perspective, is being able to effectively communicate, which we're not necessarily naturally good at. And that's probably the biggest challenge, is turning very technical responses into something that a wider audience can understand and then provide feedback to.
Other than that communication, is there any other learnings that you'd give other engineers who might be embarking on a similar or perhaps uniquely different project like Canary Creek?
It's probably perseverance. Is that if you believe in it, believe in yourself, and be prepared to be patient, to take the time to explain why and how and all of those key words and those key understandings. If you're passionate about it, keep going. Yes, there's always bits that might delay things or take a couple of steps back sometimes, and sometimes you have to listen and make sure that you evolve and there are good ideas and even potentially flaws initially that you have to overcome. But really it's about being kind of passionate about what you want to do and being prepared to spend that time talking it through rationally and listening to what other people have to say to make sure it all kind of ties together, because we can always learn.
The project is due to finish construction in 2024. Mm-hmm. It's got some really great concept designs of some pretty beautiful green infrastructure, really, especially as far as sewage overflows. It's definitely an improvement from what it was before. Are you looking forward to going and checking it out when it's finished?
I am, absolutely. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. The curse of a hydraulic modeler is we spend our time staring at the computer, not the real world. So I haven't actually seen it since, well, before they started construction. So I've seen what it was before, and that's fixed in my mind. I've only seen pictures of how it looks during construction and how big some of the holes and how much work is going into having it constructed. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing it, not just in 2024 when it's complete, but also looking at the data when it starts working and seeing how it's responding and see how effectively it's working relative to the modelling outcomes, but also seeing how that matures in 5-10 years' time as the plants really get time to take hold and the environment really starts to be kind of built around those improvements that are being made.
I've been speaking with Tony Bamford, Practice Leader, Network Planning at Stantec. Thanks for sharing the project, Tony.
And thank you, Jo. It's been a pleasure.